Holy Family Radio and the Pennsylvania Catholic Conference now present Catholic Legislative Talk with Al Ganoza.
Welcome to Catholic Legislative Talk. I'm with Frank Ryan, representative from the 101st District in Lebanon County.
That's right, Al.
And Frank, we were talking, you, like myself, a devout Catholic, were you raised that way?
Al, it was. My mom and dad lived in Baltimore, Maryland. My mom and dad are both from New York. My mom is from Brooklyn. And so some people sometimes pick up a little bit of a New York twang with me, although I'm a Baltimore Orioles fan, not a Yankees fan. But one of the things is my family was very devout. I was baptized at St. Bernardine's Church in Baltimore and spent a great deal of time being an altar boy there and loved it every minute of it. My dad died when I was 3.5 years old.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I love him dearly. I have some memories of him. But my mom did a phenomenal job of keeping the five of us together. My sister was 6 months old when my dad died. And so my mom is a real testimony to great work. And then afterwards, she went to become the director of development for the Daughters of Charity in Emmitsburg, Maryland. So I've been around Catholics my entire life.
Wow. And it's something you're not ashamed of now as you in the legislature. In fact, you will come out, and do you ever take any heat for that or any comments?
I occasionally get a comment, but very, very seldomly. I live in a district that faith is a matter of importance, so I'm honored by it. I do get some comments on Facebook occasionally, and what I would always say to people is that when you're in the legislature, it's probably pretty important to have someone who guides their life by a moral code and a character that's really important. And, you know, I always tell people, In our faith and the Christian faith, you know, Christ is a forgiving Christ. And I always say, I thank God that he is, because a couple years ago, I walked across the United States to raise awareness of kids with disabilities. But originally, it was a walk of atonement and a walk of gratitude. And what I always said was, and my faith is that important to me, is that the walk of atonement was to say, if I've ever hurt anybody, I would hope that they would forgive me.
Oh, wow.
If I ever disappointed somebody, I hope they would pray for me. And if I ever helped someone, I hope that they would help another. And the walk of gratitude was I recognized pretty early on that while we had a tough childhood, we were pretty poor, it was recognizing that my mom gave us the greatest gift of all, and that was our faith. So in the legislature, I try to guide myself in those principles of, you know, what's our faith about? What are we doing? How do we handle ourselves? What's the moral code that we conduct ourselves with, recognizing that there is a separation of church and state? That doesn't mean we do it without a moral compass and a moral code.
You know, we're going to get to some legislative talk here in a second, but I have the utmost respect for anybody that serves our country, and I think a lot of people around here do. And could you talk a little bit about your experience? You're a Marine, right? Lifelong Marine. Once a Marine, always a Marine.
Once a Marine, always a Marine. I enlisted in the Marine Corps in 1969. I was actually considering becoming a priest. I went to the minor seminary, St. Vincent's, in Princeton, New Jersey, with the Vincentian Fathers. I decided pretty quickly on that wasn't the way I was going to go. I got a very high draft notice, which meant that I was going to get drafted during the Vietnam War, so I enlisted in the Marine Corps into what's called a platoon leader's class. Got commissioned 3 years later. And served as a United States Marine commissioned officer for 30 years, 33 years total. And you're looking at one of the first persons who's failed retirement. I retired from the Marine Corps in 2002, and I got recalled to active duty in 2004 and was sent to Iraq. And that's actually where you and I first met. Shortly thereafter, you came back and did an interview shortly after I got home from the Iraq War when I was stationed with the Multinational Force in Iraq.
Wow, was that your last time over there?
That was the last time over there. It was in 2005 when I got back.
And what was it like over there?
You know, it was interesting. We could see a complete collapse of so many different areas of the economy, the nation. I get a lot of people saying, you know, we should have gone into Iraq and stuff. But when you see the Iraqi people, I was there and helped do the elections in January 30th, 2005. And you should see the number of votes. I was one of the few Americans that was permitted at the Iraqi polling places. And I had people coming up and hugging me, thanking them. It was the first time in their lives that they ever had voted freely. I have a copy of the presidential election ballot, and there must have been 75 candidates on the ballot. And if you ever want to see it, I'd love to bring it in. You'd get a real charge out of how they had done. I was on the Iraqi parliament floor when they adopted their constitution, and it was just a heartwarming experience to see these people finally break free of the shackles of the Ba'ath Party in that. And so
the premise behind why we went in might have been different, but I can tell you the people were so, so thankful. General Nash Kobandi told me that it was the first time his mom had ever voted freely. Dr. Samir called up in tears saying that his mom called saying, today I got a chance to vote for the person I wanted to vote for.
Wow, that's something we take for granted.
It's unbelievable. It was unbelievable. Memorable experiences the rest of my life. And I'm so thankful that God gave me the opportunity to help people in that kind of way.
Wow. Now, as far as over here voting, do you think, are Catholics conscious voters? I mean, do people vote on Catholic principles from what you found?
I think that you'll find, and I'm very pleased to see this, that people vote their conscience in a lot of respects, regardless of the faith. We have a number of members of the Jewish faith in the community that would base their voting on the precepts of Judaism. We have some folks in the Muslim faith that would do the same thing. The Catholic and the Christian community do it as well. We recognize that we can't do anything, we shouldn't do anything that would interfere with the creation of a religion or make a state-based religion. But we operate with that Christian, in our case, the Catholic faith, that precept of the respect for one another, the dignity of life, how important it is. And I, as an example, in terms of right to life, I absolutely believe that life begins at conception and goes to natural death. And what I tell people when that happens is that think about the society that doesn't value life. I've been in those. In my time in the Marine Corps, I've seen cultures where the life was not valued, and you don't want to live in that kind of culture. So I think you'll find that we have an awful lot of members of the legislature that deal with that and deal with the understanding of their faith and help them guide their principles. But I also tell people this, secularism is a religion as well. Agnostic is religion as well. The reason I say that is that we have to be very careful not to run away from our faith. If we did and we had secularism become the entire precept of the way the Commonwealth operates, what a place that would be. It would basically be saying we're going to be giving up everything we hold near and dear to what William Penn founded for the religious freedoms of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. So critical that we operate with that moral compass and that moral code that guide us in our decision-making and our voting.
You know, one thing I've noticed that I've taken heed with stuff we did, if we would talk with legislators who believe differently on the pro-life issue. Do you ever hear from people like that? I can see where they're coming from, but it's almost like you can't, like, not talk to people who disagree with you on one issue, right?
No, in fact, we have a number of situations. I was mentioning one to you today, a representative from Philadelphia. He and I are very close personal friends, and we don't agree on that issue at all. And what we do is we deal with it respectfully, and I think that's probably the moral compass and moral code that I would tell you is so particularly important. In my faith, respect for another person who may not agree with you is so unbelievably important. And so what I would tell people is that we guide ourselves by that way as well. And so we take the approach in dealing with one another when we disagree to be respectful of one another. I get concerned. We have it occasionally where another representative, if you don't agree with them, will be particularly caustic. But the rest of the body, regardless of philosophical beliefs, we tell us that that's inappropriate. So that person usually gets chastised by the rest of us and say, look, we can disagree, but at least recognize that we have to be responsible to one another. We actually had it happen last session.
Wow.
Where someone trashed members who didn't vote with them, and it was on a pretty significant issue.
Wow.
And so we went out and talked to them later and just said, you know, we'd rather recognize that we have differences of opinion, but you don't need to go out on social media and do that to each other, or we will start defending our positions, which would then be counterproductive to us getting anything done.
Right, and you're one of the nicest guys that I've ever met. I know you probably, no matter how people believe, you treat them with respect.
I think we have to, and you know, I often tell people that if you talk to my family and stuff, you know, I would be open about this, it's sinned in my life, and I've tried to atone for that, and it's really important to recognize that you should always keep that central focus of your faith and the dignity by which you treat one another, and I keep telling people I'm a work in progress.
I, you know, and as far as legislation out there that the Catholics would like. I mean, yesterday there was a bill introduced that I know you're backing on human trafficking, and it seems like are there other things that you think that the Catholic people, the Catholic faith, would like hearing about out there?
I think that one is the human trafficking is, and I worked with the Sisters of the Good Shepherd for decades about helping to end trafficking, but more importantly, to take care of those children that have been trafficked and help get them the counseling they need. So that's a passion of mine. It's why I walked across the United States 4 years ago to raise awareness of children with emotional and behavioral problems and disabilities. So trafficking is a big issue. I think the other areas is children with Down syndrome. I think that when we start getting into this genetic selection issues, you know, a friend of mine made a comment to me and he said, you know, I often believe at times that they don't have an extra chromosome, we're missing one. I've dealt with children with Down syndrome my entire life. I've never met an angry child with Downs. And I've often wondered, they're probably closer to Christ than we probably should be. Maybe there's things that we can learn from one another in this case. I think the issue about the dignity of life, and many of us would say right to life, but I would talk to you about the dignity of human life. I made a comment to someone, said, well, don't you think these social programs should be provided by the government? And I said, candidly, I think my responsibility as a Christian is for me to provide it. You know, if it's taxed from me and it's taken and you do it, I feel as then if I fulfilled my responsibility to take care of those in need. And I don't believe that. I believe that my responsibility is to take care of people in need. But that's my responsibility. It's not my responsibility to tell you how you should feel. And so I think that what we can do is this idea of that we help take care of one another. I think with Catholic schools is a perfect example, the earned income tax credit. Mm-hmm. I think we need to do more to help recognize that one, we can provide for the type of quality education that a child and a family would want to be raised in their faith. At the same time, it has a significant tax benefit to other taxpayers who are not of faith because we're paying for the cost of taking care of our own children. And so I think it's a particularly important issue. One of the things that I often tell Catholics, though, is we have to recognize it's really important for us one another to recognize that our Catholic schools stay Catholic, that we don't allow the interference from outside. I went to a Catholic university, and I'm going down to meet with some of the folks on the campus in a couple of days. And that's one of the questions I have is, are we instilling those core values and those core principles? We do that same thing in the Marine Corps. We do core values in the Marine Corps. And many people in the Marine Corps are of faith, as it are in other branches of service. So in terms of legislative agenda, I think that you'll find there's a lot more that brings us together, Democrats and Republicans, and separates us. I think the dignity of life when you see someone who's terminally ill, about proper hospice care to a natural death, when you start hearing things of assisted suicide, that's a bad idea for a society, because at some point in time, the logical conclusion of that is it will be selection of people who don't have value to live, and you don't want to live in that kind of a state, in that kind of a nation, or in that kind of a world. So we have an awful lot of issues that I think that can bring us together, at the same time reinforce the dignity and self-respect that we have for one another and the dignity of life.
All right. Frank Ryan, nice job as always. It was a pleasure.
Al, it's great seeing you again. I remember the first time we saw each other was right after I got back from Iraq, and I'm always impressed with your integrity and your sponsorship and your enthusiasm. God bless you, my friend.
God bless you, and likewise. And coming from you, that means a lot, my friend.
Thanks.
Thanks, Frank.
Be back with more Catholic Legislative Talk in just a moment.
From sunrise to sunset at 720 on your AM dial or 24/7 online at 720whyf.com. Holy Family Radio is proud to deliver a full schedule of quality programs from the EWTN Global Radio Network, along with daily local programs that allow our hosts to get the pulse of the Catholic heartbeat here in central Pennsylvania. For a full schedule of shows, check out our website at 720whyf.com.
Want to know what's happening with the Knights of Columbus in the Diocese of Harrisburg? There is a source. Tune into the program Night Talk on Holy Family Radio, heard Tuesdays at noon and repeated Saturdays at 12:30 p.m. Each show is loaded with information about membership, events, degree dates, and more, along with news about the Knights Insurance Program, rated one of the best such programs in the U.S. Night Talk, exclusively on AM 720, Tuesdays at 12 noon and Saturdays at 12:30.
This is Carolyn Comittis. She is the state rep for the 156th District, which is in Chester County. You are a Democrat. You were sworn in now. You're starting your second term.
Yes.
Former mayor of Westchester, too.
Yes, indeed.
And, well, first of all, I know you're big into education because that's been your life pretty much.
Yes, indeed. As I was saying, we are sitting in the building where I student taught, third grade, right above my office.
A little different now, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes, yes, right. Yes, yes, it is.
Well, first of all, St. Peter and Paul, Catholic school in your district was just named as a Blue Ribbon School.
Yeah.
First of all, to be named a Blue Ribbon School, that's pretty significant, isn't it?
It's extremely significant. And St. Peter and Paul was one of a small number of schools across Pennsylvania that was selected, and they have a very rigorous process that they have to go through that takes probably a year or more, the application. And they have to involve, certainly the principal organizes the application, and there are the teachers are involved, and the students are involved, and the parents. It's a huge undertaking and a tremendous commitment to apply to be a Blue Ribbon School, and then to be selected. I was taking a look at some of the information on Blue Ribbon Schools, which is a U.S. Department of Education program. And for 2018-19 school year, there were 43 Blue Ribbon Schools selected in Pennsylvania, and our own Saints Peter and Paul was one of them.
Wow. And you've had experience with them before. They do a great job there.
Yes. I have been to visit a number of times, and I have been very impressed. Principal Peg Egan seems to always be at the door to greet everybody. I know she's there greeting her students every day. She's there for her teachers all the time. And it is actually an award-winning principal. I'm glad that you asked me about that because
yes, you have an award.
Please
do.
I want to share something with you. I have a citation here from the Pennsylvania House of Representatives, and this is a citation that Principal Egan will be receiving soon from me. I will be visiting the school again happily, as I always do, and this is a citation that was prepared in Harrisburg for Principal Egan, who was honored with the Terrell H. Bell Award for Outstanding School Leadership, again by the U.S. Department of Education. And this is an award that is given to principals of national Blue Ribbon schools. Not every principal, but the principals are all considered for this very special Terrell H. Bell Award for Outstanding School Leadership, and our own Principal Egan was selected, and she was one of only 11 principals in the United States who was awarded this wonderful Department of Education Award. So I will be stopping by the school and presenting this to Principal Egan.
So give you a good excuse to visit and say hi.
Yes, it will. That's right. And when I visited, I was really taken with the level and variety of activities. They have a TV station that's run by their middle school students. This is a K-8 school. Mm-hmm. And they do the news and write the program, and they do their own video and so on. They have a school store
that they run in collaboration with the Greater Westchester Chamber of Commerce, which is awesome. So these students are having a chance to work with business leaders in our community and learning all about marketing and finance and purchasing and sales and promotions and all of these wonderful things. So again, another real life experience.
They also have they have a school-wide theme each year, and each of the classes works on whatever the theme might be. And then at the end of the year, they have a
school-wide presentation around that theme, and which is a pretty cool way of integrating all of the curricula, the math and science and language arts and arts and music and so on, and having a cross-curricular approach, which is an educator. I know is such a great way to teach kids critical thinking and problem solving and writing skills and public speaking skills and integrating it all into a really fun program to share with the other kids in the school.
Well, and they do a lot of public service too. Actually, as most schools do now, right?
Yes, but this is part of their mission. And Principal Egan took the motto of the school, which is hearts to love and hands to serve, which is just the best motto ever.
Yeah.
And she has turned that into the school's mission. And so they do a lot of community outreach. The students have programs for seniors, for veterans, for families in need. They at their school store, they raise money and they select a particular charity and need in the community to raise money for. They've raised real dollars, like $4,000 for the, you know, in a year for the particular group that they're helping. So they are very connected with the community. Business community, as well as all of our friends in need.
What is your background again in education?
I have my bachelor's degree in education from Westchester and a master's in education from Widener, and taught in the Octorara School District.
Mm-hmm. Chester County?
Yeah, Chester County, Western Chester County, mm-hmm. and a little bit of Eastern Lancaster County for 12 years. And as I said, and here I am full circle sitting in my district office here in the borough of Westchester in the Washington Square apartments on the floors above the ground floor and offices here on the ground floor, which is where our district office is, and used to be Biddle Street Elementary School, and before that was the Westchester Junior High School, and at one time the junior and senior high school together.
Way back.
This is a historic building, yes.
So I'm assuming that education is always high on your priority list for what you do legislatively then, too.
It is the foundation for our healthy, productive community, is building individual citizens who can lead with their gifts and leave everything a little better than we found it. And education is the key, starting with pre-K. I've been working a lot with pre-K for Pennsylvania, and St. Peter and Paul has a pre-K program in addition to their K to 8. And education is the foundation for a healthy community and society, and St. Peter and Paul is doing a great job of preparing their students to be productive, healthy, kind, thoughtful citizens. And they're preparing them by having them actually do good things in the community and in their school today.
And one last question. For somebody my age, there wasn't any real pre-K.
No,
I'm sure, right. A lot of people may be out there watching, listening. How significant is that for the kids, and how does it help kids nowadays?
The all of the studies have shown, you know, the adage, well begun is half done, that when a child has access to a quality pre-K program, that this gives them the foundation for being successful in school. That and what we see across Pennsylvania is that there are some wonderful pre-K programs, and the governor and legislature are putting more and more money into pre-K because we know how important it is. The children are more successful. The studies have shown that children who have had a quality pre-K program are less likely to fall behind in school, to end up in the criminal justice system even. These are really important factors for success in life. And so making affordable, quality pre-K programs available for every child in Pennsylvania is a goal that I share with the governor and most of the educators, citizens, and legislators that I know. So we're working really hard on that.
Okay. Representative Kmita, thank you so much. Anything else you want to add, any other points you want to make? Or?
Well, I'd just like to give a shout out to the students and parents at Saints Peter and Paul. These young people, I had two students who, you know, when I visit, they tour me around and they're my guides, and they are just amazing young people. And I know, and there's always parents in the school, and that partnership with the parents and the school is so important. And Saints yeah. Peter and Paul has a very strong parent presence, which is probably one of the reasons they became a blue ribbon school. So I want to give a big shout out to the students and also the parents and all the teachers. And of course, Principal Egan, our award-winning principal. It's that partnership that makes Saints Peter and Paul a wonderful place for young people to learn and grow and to live out their mission of hearts to love and hands to serve.
Okay. Thank you, Representative. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to this week's edition of Catholic Legislative Talk on Holy Family Radio.